Show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters and those Heisei guys, too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up!
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Rider! I'm Aleph.
And I am Amit, who's objecting, but go ahead.
And I'm Jonathan, who isn't objecting as strongly, but anyway.
We can go back and edit that out, guys.
It's fine.
I had heard this talked about as the holiday special.
Well,
I freaking love Santa Claus, even though I am kind of whatever on Christmas.
Okay.
Well, I
like how if somebody has a block, like blocks at their house that spell out Santa Claus, you can flip it around to say Satan Claus. That makes me happy.
And yeah. There's a, back in my home state, there's a metal festival called Hail Santa.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I always thought so. That's a clever attack. I don't know what they're calling the one...
Unless the guy who was planning the metal festival was dyslexic, in which case that's kind of unfortunate.
Well, you know, if that's what happened, it was like, well...
It's a happy coincidence, yeah. Like, go with that.
Yeah, it was still a wintertime metal festival, so...
That's cool.
It's good with that.
Works either way.
Listener, what we're doing for our special here is going back in time to a simpler time where writers were actually awesome.
Ooh, Days of Yore. I like Days of Yore.
And we're going to be discussing and watching, so therefore doing a commentary on... Kamen Rider episodes 1 and 2 from 1971. We're trying something new, so Jonathan has control of when we start and pause and stop, so we'll just have to see how that goes. But why don't you go ahead and give us a countdown and we'll begin the episode.
Yeah, if you want to get it, incidentally, then you can head over to kitsubs.blogspot.com, I believe is their URL, where you can find all these links. And also there are other subs they're doing. They've just finished Stronger, which is another amazing series if you want to watch that one. So yeah, they're doing a great job over there. So go over and download it, and you can watch along with us because it was the Kids Subs episodes we were watching. So yeah, feel free to download them and then listen along with us. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Kenshin.
When's the last time you heard a motorcycle sound in a Kamen Rider show?
No kidding.
Why is he not driving a car? That's what I don't understand.
Small point of order, I just love that you can see his mouth through the mouth.
Oh, totally. Oh, frack you.
Oh, that's too good. That's funny. These sounds are the sounds of us having audio difficulties with this thing. So, give us a second, listeners.
Jump.
Hopefully you're enjoying the awesome theme song, though, as we're going along.
I don't know if we'll get any of the audio from the actual cast. I don't know, it depends, but it might work.
Well, it's buzzing in my ears, so I may pick up on that, but we'll see.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Sorry. It was way too loud, so...
Yeah, you can control the volume in the window itself
of
the actual audio.
Right,
kind of.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's good. Yes.
Beautiful. Yes, much better. soft. Okay.
See, we're still learning how to use this tool, so we apologize, listeners, if there's a bit of like crazy of us talking about things that you can't even see.
Yeah.
The Invincible Spider-Man.
Mysterious, but
yeah, totally not plagiarism. Totally not plagiarism.
Well,
totally not plagiarism.
I think.
Hey, no, there's no hyphen in there.
I think Ishinomori did it better, but that's just me.
Well, you know, fair. Our protagonist.
So creepy.
It's all the kaijin, are they? That's totally a great thing.
Oh.
And again,
upside down bike.
There are some who haven't heard this, but my one complaint about, my biggest complaint about Kamen Rider is he's not monstrous enough. And, or conversely, the kaijin aren't, non-monstrous enough. So.
Well, I think that, you know, loath as I am to bring up the remake of this that they did in the aughts, but that was one thing that I think Kamen Rider the First really got done very well.
Yeah, that's true.
The monsters and Rider, you know, they looked like they were from the same thing.
Mm.
I would just like to point out
exposition.
The irony, or like the little cuteness, to Tachimon is saying, as a writer, he's the best there is. about Hongo, because, yeah, I would totally agree with that. Or pretty close to it.
The Insidious Biker Gang. Who would know?
Yeah, I hope not. That would be a bad idea for them.
Yeah, totally. He has an IQ of 600, which is as much as 600 PE teachers.
Ouch.
Sorry, that's a joke from Red Dwarf. I do apologize to anyone who teaches PE. I don't think you're stupid.
I just like the whole thing where it just opens with, man, these guys are all these guys are unfamiliar. Are they challenging me?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
They're riding
direct. Dudes here.
Look at his face, just like, oh yeah, oh yeah, there we go. Just let them crash into each other.
It's cool how bosses. And look at Shocker being all equal opportunity. They've got dudes and chicks on bikes going after him.
I did not notice that. Good
He is going to be menaced by fishnet tights in about a minute or so.
That's true, but it's interesting because they kind of fall away from that going on later. I mean, you have a few exceptions,
but
here it's there.
Well, the mooks do have the...
Go on.
I like all the kind of smoke effects. It's reminding me of Hibiki. But he fought a spider in his first episode, so, you know.
Well, I love the fishnet menace. Fight spider monsters and then bat monsters in the first couple episodes. It's a callback. It makes me happy. It's not quality in and of itself, but it's a great idea.
Yeah, it is at least fun. I thought when I saw the, I don't know, the double movie with Narmi as the main character, I was like, oh, how funny. Bat spider. I get it. Skull man. I get that too. Ha ha ha. So, it was pretty neat.
That makes up for Sanju just not being especially clever.
Actually, I was reminded when I was watching this how much this is like Iron Man, sort of. There's quite a kind of, I don't know, there's quite a kind of Iron Man vibe to it.
I could see that.
Yes, the most evil organization. Oh.
That's just a great...
You like the blood on the globe, too?
Okay.
And the big monster hand, the red paint on the globe. Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere, in Japan.
Oh, I never really caught this spider's web thing before. I don't know why. I've seen this like 3 or 4 times.
Well, it's a great... and also then the chains around the legs is like kind of Nazism. Yeah, IQ over 600. Like, how that's even possible, I don't know, but anyway.
I just love the fact, though, that they don't want meatheads. They want people who are smart and strong. That's really cool.
No intention of joining Shocker. You get a choice.
And, like, some people might want to point at this as a huge plot hole, but I think this makes a lot of sense, especially if you consider that it's possible that, you know, destroying someone's mind and then making them your slave might be pretty expensive to do. So they modify people's bodies first and then test them out.
Yeah.
I think it's neat. Although, maybe there should have been more, like, rejected drones that were less powerful
because they had no
intellect.
Yeah, that would have been a
cool
angle, yeah.
Well, that would have been a great thing to do with the skeleton Shocker troops.
Mm. Yeah?
Yeah, if they could have been rejects, yeah. It's interesting they have... They're almost trying the kind of Battlestar Galactica Cylons thing with, like, you know, all of our cyborgs all over the world and you don't know who they are and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just they didn't really play on that angle, but it would have been interesting to see. Although the idea that that Shocker is kind of all pervasive is a great concept.
Yeah, it really is, and it you know never goes far enough in the show. I don't think.
I don't know. I think it's
sure
pretty.
The kids don't like just scream and cry and just give up on government.
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty blooming scary. Like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty terrifying when I watched it. Even when I was like 20, I was like, "This is you totally believe Shocker are everywhere." Like watching it, I think so anyway. But you know,
well, I
thought it was really.
I mean,
well
I still think they're as terrifying, but I don't think the terror is. I think they come across more in the show alone as being like a powerful, like I don't know, like a clandestine organization.
Yeah,
less than
because I
heard
that in the manga it was a lot more like bleak.
Oh, and it's way more direct. Yes, Shocker is part of the government. So,
yeah, I love that Ishinomori just looks at subtlety and then Ryder can. Oh, we could go with very oblique symbolism, or, nah, the villains are big business and the government, oppressing people.
Yep.
This is so cool, too, that they're offering him this choice now that they're, like, putting him through the ringer, and they're saying, like, submit, yeah. and you won't feel pain anymore, and you'll be, I don't know, like, basically invincible, and he's still fighting against that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, that's the methodology of them, isn't it? Because, I mean, they all want you to come over willingly, but if not, well, we always got use for another tool.
Right.
Mm. That chain's so slack.
Yeah, it is.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, there we go. It gets better. I gotta say, I do
really like seeing him without the mask on. It's quite a cool kind of.
Yeah. It is cool.
Oh, it's the G-Man.
I love how much of this is framed in shadow and darkness, and you don't know really what's going on.
Yeah, and I just love the sets, the lighting.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's because they knew the sets were quite cheap, so I guess they had to. It was all about how they were lit that was going to make it, that was going to sell the idea, rather than, you know.
Well, it's something I've been really noticing in a lot of the current writer paradigm, you know, even in some of the ones I've liked, that they are barely directed.
Mm.
They just have sets, but there's nothing. I don't know. There's no creativity in it. I mean, there's creativity, but it's not quite so dynamic, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas something like this, there's tension, there's weird lighting, it's intense, it's scary. Look at Fujio. Like, they jumped through some plastic. But...
Right. Hey, you believe it's glass. The sound design and the fluidity of the shot, it just doesn't give you enough time to register that it's not.
Yeah, and if you realize it intellectually, you're still like, again, meeting things halfway. I don't have to go halfway to get into this.
Right.
No. This is like really creepy 70s Doctor Who. Like, I really love the vibe they're going for with this. I don't know if it's just the Kaijin designs make me think of that, but it's really got the same kind of vibe to it. It's like...
No, it's very true.
I mean, just look at this hand. It's, like, so sinister, and...
And the monster designs, like, they aren't that good. Like, they are good, but, like, they're not, like, you know, they're not prosthetics like we have now.
Right.
But you believe it. Like, you know, that's the thing, you know.
Yeah, totally.
The Fishnet Menace.
It's a good title for a movie.
I will say that they are creepy as hell.
Yeah, they really are.
I find it interesting how they're trying to, like, dehumanize the humans in Shocker all the time with, like, the face paints and, like, you know, and the masks and all that kind of stuff.
And the uniforms. And...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and even the robotic motion of the women there, you know?
Yeah.
Mm.
And
it's cool that they're not showing all of him in shot. Ah, here he is.
I love too, though, first of all, I gotta say, I like the idea that him falling down the hill activated the turbine and completed his transformation. That's just too cool, especially because that's kind of paid off in episode 5, I think, with the Mantis Man and the earthquakes.
Oh yeah.
Which is really great. Okay.
Man, look at Fujioka.
And these really epic Shore-esque fight scenes. Yeah. Like, just, there's so much energy there.
Man.
And really well directed as well.
That was a great
cut,
too, right there. Sometimes the edits are bad, but that was a fantastic one. It just looked so... so
and the artwork, too.
That was weird.
No, they just have... Well, they ad breaks, aren't they? That's the old-fashioned ad breaks.
I guess it just... the later ones are a little different, so it kind of threw me.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've watched this first episode.
Totally pulls you in, though. It's almost like a movie in the way it's done. This is what the first kind of really latched onto in some ways, is this kind of, you know, this, I don't know, it's obviously the guy who directed this really knew what he was doing and he was like, I know what I've got to work with and it's not amazing, but, you know, it's, I know what I can do.
Yeah, I wonder about that. And it's interesting the way the narrative is structured. You see Hongo, who's, you know, Shocker's target, and then you get carried through with him till he escapes. Then you get Midorikawa getting killed and, or, you know, being attacked in the threat against his daughter. And then it just carries right through to her, and it doesn't feel, she doesn't feel like she's extraneous to me. She doesn't feel like she's there to be a pretty face or a victim. She feels like she, and maybe it's just because I'm more familiar with the rest of the show. In this presentation, she feels like she's meant to be part of the cast and just another
character.
Just another person affected by Shocker, you know?
Those Roimis disappeared really quick.
Yeah.
Oh, and Tachibana being awesome as usual.
Yeah. And I feel too, like, as simple as this show is and how episodic it is, there's a lot of clever things they do within each episode. And, I mean, like this, I believe this is, yeah, like this whole scene right here is a great little play. You totally don't expect it at all.
Yeah. No, I think and I think what's interesting is, like, it kind of, the circularity of the episodes kind of portrays how, like, the fight against Shocker, it's not, like, meaningless, but, like, it just goes on. It's like, even if the series stopped, Kamen Rider would still be fighting them because that's what he does.
Right.
It's a really great way to kind of get that message across in the structure of the show itself.
Oh, Shocker got played. I just love that.
Eyes on the road, eyes on the road.
Yeah.
that double blast.
I like how his hands are just never not in motion.
Yeah.
That's a great touch.
You know, and I think the shot of him in the base calling things out, it really evokes, you know, the how some spiders work, where they're just sitting at the center of their web waiting to feel and then strike.
And it's also classic Bond as well, isn't it? It's got all those kind of Spectre overtones and that kind of thing. It's drawing on those spy novels and the Cold War and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot in it.
All right, this is a stupid thing. I'm just very happy that, like, okay, I got kidnapped in my motorcycle gear. I've turned into Kamen Rider. I've turned back and found a baller suit.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Look at that tie as well. Look at that tie. What a design. I never thought they did enough with his reason for fighting, I guess, actually. Like, I like that it's simple, but I always thought there was something that could more have been made of it, maybe.
Hmm.
Well, nowadays, I think they would have.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm talking to the sensibilities of a completely different audience, but, like, you know.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I understand. I'm not like, oh, you're dumb.
That's what you're like, off air.
I like the Sue Fujioka. He's just, like, so happy. And look at Professor Midorikawa. He's just, like, broken because of...
Well, he knows what
Shocker
is.
Scene. Yeah. This scene. This scene.
Oh.
Look at the monster I've become.
I love that. It's ridiculous. I think it was a 70s thing, that, like, quick panning between...
Yeah, that cut,
just like, bam, bam, bam. It's almost too much, but it feels right, you know?
Especially with the lighting, just really...
Well, it's almost... He almost looks at the Phantom of the Opera, the way it's phrased across... The mask across his face.
Yeah.
The shadow.
Well, he's a monster, and he can't... Like, he can't change that now.
Exactly. You'll grow out of it, Hongo, don't worry.
I know it's a ridiculous question, but just, like, in his brief, it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
They just want to make, you know, maybe cyborgs have not really penetrated the consciousness of 5-year-old children in the 70s.
No, I agree. I
just like, no, look, understand, there's no going back.
Right.
Which I don't know, I just like it.
I'm riveted.
Yeah, no, me too. You know, he's having his crisis of identity, but he just doesn't know what Shocker is.
Yeah. Well, look, it's almost like Gaim, except 1,000,000,001 times better. Am I a man? Am I a monster? Except done right. Right.
Well, it is something I've really come to miss in a lot of my Kamen Rider. I really do miss, like, the monstrousness.
Yeah. Look how terrifying this is, these webs creeping in on him.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and then he gets snatched by him. Like, that's so awful.
Yeah, really, just... Like, I think one of the things that I really like about this first episode is that it makes a kind of dream logic.
Yeah.
But only a dream logic.
Right.
Mm.
And, like, for anybody who wants to criticize Ruriko for thinking that Hongo killed her father right here, he's telling a ridiculous story about a Spider-Man. And
yeah.
Who knows what those webs are? They could look like rope, they could look like anything. And
yeah.
It really did, in that instance, I think it's a very believable misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And especially when you just heard them arguing. Yeah, and this is terrible.
Exactly.
I mean, like, awful.
The shock of foam.
No, it looks bad. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
He's a brown recluse spider.
Yeah, yeah.
He just uses it even more so.
It's great that she's skeptical, actually.
Yeah, no, this is good. Like, that's intelligent.
Why should
you? Know. I saw you kill him. Yeah, exactly. This is way better than Inuyo's, like, if we just talked about it, it would be fine. This is exactly that scene, but played out, so, you know. The talking about it bit. Just.
But I like how, just the way it's being framed in the shot from her perspective, he doesn't
yeah.
look trustworthy.
Yeah.
Mm, exactly. And yet,
and then along came a spider.
Yep. I love his weird spider cape.
Yeah, mm. It's so funny.
It looks almost like tartan, doesn't it? Like,
a little bit. Well, he's representing the Imperial forces. Oh, never mind. I mean, he could, but who knows? I'm not gonna say that right now. I love the fact that, like, they decided to give him. Well, I guess. Well, it's funny. They give him a transforming bike, which I guess works, but it's ironic, or not ironic, it's kind of silly that it's got the Tachimana Racing Club logo on it already. Like, you gotta wait till episode 2 or 3 to do that, come on.
Mm. Well, he doesn't have, it's interesting because he doesn't really have a henshin sequence, like, until, like, episode what, like...
40?
40, yeah, like, 14? Yeah, like...
No, 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 Hongo never has a henshin sequence. It's,
oh, yeah,
it's
true, yeah, yeah.
Who introduces it. And then Hongo gets it in, like, 41, 42, something like that.
I just wish I knew what the... Ah, that's great.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's just a quick cut effect. That's really good.
Yeah, it does look so good.
And I wish I knew what the face paint was meant to signify. Mm.
Wasn't it, like, I don't know, the army? Like, that's the... But I don't know, it's red and green, though, not like brown that you would expect.
Oh, that's... I love this thing they're doing.
Yeah.
The weird...
I'm going to drop the hat. Like,
yeah.
Sorry.
Really?
Clouds are going overhead.
I don't know why, it's really evocative.
I love, too, that, like, not only is he a weapon that was meant to be used by Shocker against humanity, but he turned against them, but he even takes their weapons. So, like, on the macro level, he's doing it, too. And it's just so awesome. And, like, I gotta be honest, I was originally disappointed. I was waiting for Black to get a sword, because I knew Black RX had one. So I was like, alright, you know, Sword Saint Bitogenia is here, and he's got the Satan Saber, and so Black's gonna get a sword, right? And he never did. And then, okay, well, Shadow Moon's got the Satan Saber now, so he's gonna get a sword, right? It never happened. And, it's just something I kind of accept, and it's cool with Hongo, because he just... rips people's weapons out of their hands and uses them.
Yeah,
against
I was gonna
them.
Say, yeah, he has no need of weapons.
He is a weapon.
There's a great meme going around that's like, he's just run a one, he's like, you use a sword? Are your legs deficient? It's just like, this is exactly what this scene is like, you know.
And again,
like, I don't need your weapons.
Oh, these rough and tumble fight scenes are just so awesome.
Yeah, just, like, the way he's climbing, it's kind of hilarious.
It's all stop motion, like, it's kind of, it's cool that they're... I admire them for trying different things. Like, you know, when stuff like that doesn't necessarily work, like, I really admire them for being like, how do we make a spider climb something when we have no money? Like,
right.
That's basically what they're trying to, you know,
right.
to answer.
Yeah, and then his cape flies off, and it's just...
Yeah.
But, like, look at the energy and the freneticism, and it's just, like, it's so committed. They're so committed to this. It's great.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not allowing anyone to talk.
It's cool. Don't worry. Like, We all knew we were going to have a lot to say about this episode, like these episodes, because, you know, they're really awesome.
I like to think they're, like, he caused internal bleeding, and it caused his venom sacs to, like, bust open so that it ate him alive.
Yeah, no, that... would have been awesome if he'd, like, fired a dart to hit him, he'd grabbed it in midair and thrown it back at him.
That would have been,
like,
so amazing.
Like, I know that would have been ridiculously hard to film with, like, no money, but, you know, worth a try.
You do a whip pan and have him cock his arm.
Yeah, yeah, totally, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like... Look, you just fallen down a 50-foot hole. Are you all right? Touchy Bunner asks no questions about why he's carrying him.
By the way, who does the tie adjusting better? I think it's on.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally, yeah, yeah. I must admit, also, like, the music in this is cool too. Like,
yeah, it's so moody.
Kind of melancholic trumpet.
Yeah.
It's good.
And it's funny because it's just the main theme, like, slowed down to a dirge almost. Look how sad he looks.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Well, I think it's you know, it's really fun to go back and watch the old stuff and see, like, oh, so this is where they got the idea for the thing they do nowadays.
Right. Mm.
The sad version of the theme song. They all do that now.
Yeah.
Well, it's all like motifs and letter motifs and heroic themes, but played in minor keys and stuff. Like, they use it a lot in opera, especially, and, like, in musicals, you see it. But, like, I just like applying that to TV, and it's cool.
Oh, actually, I love it in Forze. Like, that is an amazing sad theme.
Yeah, and Hibiki, which is just an opera, but, like, put on TV. And...
I just mostly...
Conrad, a mask of justice. Sorry.
Episode 2, my fiancée, and she pointed out that the theme song, in many ways, is very, like, Ennio Morricone. Spaghetti Western.
Mm.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you listen, there's a lot of, like, good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
Well, that's just interesting, because when... Well, I was listening to John Williams talking about the music for Star Wars, and he described that as the Western in space, because if you listen to the chords in it, they're all very similar to a lot of, like, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and that kind of thing. So sci-fi kind of evolving out of the genre of the Western is actually quite a common thing, really.
That's, yeah. I had not heard that, but that makes a lot of sense.
This is what comes of being, like, a guy who sits and listens to far too much music and just goes, like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I do this far too much.
Or just enough.
I think not enough, actually. I think there's totally a thing I should do more. But anyway, right, let me just...
All right, load up the next one.
Yeah, that was a fantastic episode.
It was really good, like...
It's really satisfying, too.
Well, oh, totally, like... Pack
a lot in a very small amount of space, which I really appreciate. Narrative economy, like, mad.
I think...
Oh, totally, like, it's not even, as you say, so satisfying, like, it's both complete and incomplete at the same time, which is the best thing it can be for a TV show. Like, you feel it's satisfying as a story as in itself, but as part of a larger narrative, it's also still incomplete, and so you want the next part because you want it, you know, it's the perfect mix of those two things.
Oh, well, and then, like, I think that's something, like, I have not watched a lot of Showa. All I've really watched is Black. And that's something I thought Black really did very well as well. And I think, honestly, it has a lot in common with Rider One here, which I think was kind of its raison d'etre. But, you know, you've got these short little horror movies, and then Kamen Rider shows up and just beats the ever-loving crap out of the monster of the week.
Yeah.
Like, ah, so you're a demon here to menace a nice young girl who didn't do anything wrong. All
right. Right,
I'm gonna beat you to death.
No,
I think I think that's interesting. I was like, I mean, I don't know, because I found Black to be somewhat too episodic, but then this kind of stuff I kind of went with and it was okay. So I don't know. Maybe I just haven't seen enough Black. I probably need to sit down and, like,
or
see,
maybe the, you know, I have not watched a lot of the original series, and it could just be that it's much better constructed or constructed a bit better for its purposes.
I do find it interesting, though, with Rider, how we've had, like, not in the sense of the origin story redone, like, in comic books, where we've had Superman's origin story told a billion and one times, everybody knows it, but, like, there seems to have been a lot of times where people have kind of, like, gone, let's go back to the drawing board and kind of, we'll remake it, but in this new, different way. And, like, Black kind of feels like that, and in the same way kind of Kuga feels that. But then with Sentai, that's, like, never happened. So you kind of have this continually growing narrative offset against this kind of narrative that seems to keep reinventing itself, which is interesting when you kind of contrast the two, I find.
It is. It is.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think, yeah, I always just am in love with Ryder as the oppressed who... the member of an outsider class who always just comes in to show the dominant narrative what's up.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, it definitely a good way to be. Yeah.
Listening to you two and Sona talk about in a yet to be released episode, the like kind of like learning things from the writers, watching them experience things. Oh, you know, Watcher went through this and guy from Denno went through this, which, by the way, Denno sounds like the core, like how you guys describe Denno, like the different interpretations of it sounds, maybe unfortunately, like the core of a book I want to write. So I'm almost upset. Like, ah, oh, damn, I shouldn't do it now, but I probably should.
Okay.
I'll tell you one thing. You should watch Denno. That's definitely what you should do.
But I think I'm gonna have to put it off until I'm done, you know, because I don't want to be unduly influenced.
Totally.
I totally understand. I'm in the middle of a fiction project myself, and, like, watching Kamen Rider is like, oh, but that series did the thing I was going to do, and that series did another thing I was going to do later. Ah, oh, son of a...
Damn all of you fools. Why do you steal my ideas?
On the other hand, I think, like, as someone trying to make art, I think you could do a lot worse than analyzing the structure of a season or the episodes of Rider, because I honestly think even though in I feel recent series have kind of fallen off of this, there's a certain level of just base level craftsmanship that Kamen Rider has that a lot of series, even big, impressive A&E original, HBO, Showtime, etc., just don't have.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
There are no seasons of Rider that are just like, all right, well, now we have to do place setting for the next season, because there is no next season.
Oh, you mean like Downton Abbey season 4?
As much as I love Downton Abbey, yes, I agree with you completely.
No, yeah, wasn't it terrible? It's like, oh, now the slate has been wiped so that we can, you know, start things over again in the next episode, the next season. I'm still going to buy the DVD and watch it, binge watch it, but
this
still.
Is why Downton Abbey needs to have a Downton Abbey coup.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I've just seen it. Oh yes. Lord Grantham walks in, Henshin. Oh yes. That's what we need. Lady Mary.
I love my continuing narrative series, but at the same time, I feel like after a certain point, they should know when to shut the heck up. Like, a lot of series just needed to have ended in the third season.
Well, I love a lot of the time with Rider, there's no status quo to restore. Like, the thing that annoyed me with Smallville after a while was, like, you get to, like, episode one is like, let's set up this intractable problem, and we get to episode 22, and somebody solves the intractable problem in 5 seconds, which then, you know, creates some cataclysm. And then you blow everything up in episode 24 of a season, and then episode one, you spend 90% of the episode restoring the status quo for another season. I'm just like, why can you not commit? I was gonna say, why can you not commit to a world that's changed? I know it's difficult to write, but that's the construction part.
If you are gonna have trouble committing to it after it's done,
don't do
you
it.
You shouldn't have written it in the first place.
Well, this is my problem with Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who. This is my biggest problem with it. That's why I'm annoyed. But, well, yeah, but it's not for that. It's not for now.
I think I have one last thing to say before we move into the second episode.
Go for it.
I think that part of the problem is with, you know, the Smallville example is they don't know if CW is going to approve another season, so they might go all out and, you know, at the end of the first season to try to make it dramatic and fulfilling, but then once they're approved for a second season, then, you know, they don't have as much lead time and they have to hurry up and write it.
Yeah.
That's a difficulty that one should surmount, not one should use as an excuse to deliver a mediocre product.
I think it's a problem with the way that TV commissioning, in a sense, works, because I know that with Babylon 5, it was originally a 5-season project. and then there was a ratings dip in season 4, so they rewrote the end of season 4 to account for that, because they were told they weren't going to get a fifth season. Then the ratings picked up as they got to the end of season 4, so they were told they could have the fifth season, and they were like, but we've already used up material. And so they had to kind of cobble together something for like this half season, and it was like, and season 5 isn't, it's disappointing, but like it's not necessarily awful, it's just, you know, that if they'd been given the time to stretch it out, it would have been better. And I'm just kind of like, the idea that you're living season to season on these shows, it's kind of amazing and in a sense, but I can understand why they do it. But I wish that they would be like,
oh, yeah,
we're going to give you this, you know, you've got this chunk of time and you know, you use it. If you crash and burn, that's your own problem. But then I can understand why they don't, because as a business move, that's not how you run anything.
Yeah, but I almost wonder if, may I?
Yeah, go. Yeah,
okay, I almost wonder if, a good writer should take those things into consideration and then figure, well, I have a lot of places I can take these characters, and there's, you know, milestones on their way to that. And end of season 1, this is where they would be. End of season 2, this is where they would be. End of season 3, this is where they would be, etc. And it can still be fulfilling because of the, you know, journey that you're going on with the characters themselves.
Yeah. And well, I think there's a difference between something like, I think it depends how the thing is conceived in the first place. Like, if it's conceived as a 5-season show, then you would write it as a 5-season show. If it's conceived as a 1-season show and then somebody goes, oh, we need a second season, then you're like, oh, crap.
Right.
I haven't got it. You know, I haven't got a thing I could do. Which, you know, is fair enough, because you were told you were getting a season and you wrote a season. But then you kind of have to, like, with the benefit of hindsight, you can always turn around and be like, oh, well, you should have thought. But then I don't know whether that's necessarily fair in the first place. Sorry, Elif, I've been talking over you. You should, like...
Oh, no. I've just been like, yes, no. You know, because I'm right with you, because, I mean, like, the business side of making entertainment is just such a bizarre thing to me, because everyone's got big ambitions. Everyone wants their show to last 1,000 seasons.
Mm.
But they don't always write it in a way that supports 1,000 seasons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other... No, go on, sorry.
No, I'm just saying, like, usually you don't actually want 1,000 seasons, because, like, look, I know, I'm not going to slag on soap operas as a general thing, because soap operas have actually...
been the core of a lot of television, and, yeah, like, yeah. They've done a lot of interesting things with the format they have.
And they're the ones who brought in serialized narrative. I mean, they've been doing serialized narrative since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
mainstream TV has only just now really been catching up to that. And but at the same time, like, after a while, you're just making TV, you're not telling a story. And I think the very serious, craft, is always like, no, tell a story.
I think that's the thing, is you have this fundamental sort of, I don't know, like, war almost going on between between the creativity and the money, and both are essential to make a product, but you have these competing interests where, like, the creativity is saying, you know, make things as long as they should be because it serves the purpose of the craft and so on and so forth, whereas the money is saying, there's money here, why aren't we making it? And you're kind of like... These two things are fundamentally hitting against each other. And occasionally you get people who understand that you have to serve both interests and you have to make concessions one way or the other. But, like, you know, to my mind, I would think the craft would be better, but I understand at the end of the day, this is a business proposition you're making to these people. And increasingly so now, I think, because especially with, like, you know, fragmented audiences and all that kind of thing, if your show isn't going to be watched, then why are they bothering? You know, that's the thing. Because I know that I was talking to somebody once about Star Trek, I think, and they said, about serialized storytelling in general, and they said, the dream of any show is to get it into syndication, because you've made your money forever then. And I was like, if that's what we're saying about how we should write stories, and I'm a bit like, I'm sorry, but that's a mess, really, that's just a mess.
Well,
let
me be devil's advocate there. If you want to reach serial, syndication comes after 100 episodes has been hit, right? That's a general idea?
I think it used to be 86, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, whatever, yeah.
Okay, so, 86 to 100, maybe you should just plan a story that will, you know, sustain that many episodes.
Well, I quite agree with you, you know, that's the thing. I just think...
There's a lot of people who don't understand what kinds of stories will take that sort of, will go that long.
I suppose, I just, for some reason, I really like the idea of narrowly focused within time stories.
Yes, me too.
So, like, stories occurring in, like, real time?
No, no, like one show. I mean, not, like, 24, necessarily. I mean, because, anyway, I've never seen 24.
They pioneered that idea.
I've never seen 24. I have nothing to say about 24. I have no opinions.
It was a good concept for a season, but not seven.
Okay. Well, there you
go. That's my summary of 24.
Well, yeah, maybe it should have been 24, and then, like, 48, and then, you know, 1 week, or whatever.
It did interesting things, but you can't keep innovating on the same thing for seasons. That's my opinion. But yeah,
right. But
people will tell me I'm wrong and I'm a terrible person. But anyway,
Kiefer Sutherland got work.
Yeah, that's like nice for him. But like, because
he sure as hell wasn't getting work from Touch. But anyway, moving on.
But you know, like that '90s writer show that it all takes place over 1 week. Like that's a really interesting concept. Now I would like to see more things do that. Or like Angel season 4 is, I'm pretty sure it takes place over like the course of a couple months, if not like a couple weeks. Mm. And it's amazing.
So yeah.
And,
See, I know, I like the opposite in a sense, because I like the idea of lots of time occurring, but then I hate what they do with Doctor Who, where they make you think you've missed big chunks of the narrative. So like, I can understand from your point of view too, where like, you want to see all the characters' development and not kind of it be left to your imagination, or the writer's lack of imagination to show you their development.
And I think
he aged 300 years in between episodes. Oh, well, I'm sure none of that was stuff I would have liked to have seen.
Nope.
Why does it matter?
Have you seen the most recent season, Elif? I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen
bits
it.
Of it. I honestly do not care. Go.
Okay, fair. Well, you have an episode where like Clara and him are like really angry, and she gets like ill in his face, and she's like, "I never want to see you again. Never come back to me. Never ever come back." And he's like, "Okay, fine." So he leaves. And the next episode, they're all pally on the Orient Express in space, and you're like, "There was an episode I missed in between where you were angry."
Back up. They actually did the Orient Express in space episode.
Yep, with mummies and everything. Well, episode, yeah, pretty much.
They mentioned that at the end of season 5. Oh, it was a good idea, but if you don't do that as the Christmas special, you don't get to do it. It's too late.
Yeah, well,
Undead Egyptian Goddess on the Orient Express in space. That's a clever thing. They didn't show it. The bubble's over.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it's just, I don't know, I was... This season has just been incredibly disappointing in every important respect. Annoying because it had so much potential and just. But this is the thing, like, I just feel they keep missing great chunks of a narrative out. Like, this is the problem I have. Not to the same extent with Ryder, actually. It's the one I found interesting, but like, it's just like they seem to expect you to make these narrative jumps, and I'm like, but I shouldn't have to, should I? Like, you should show me the thing, not expect me to guess.
Like, I appreciate them, you know, asking something of the audience, but what they're asking is to paper over the things they have not done.
Mm.
And, like, again, I will say Ryder, for the most part, has avoided that. I do feel that Geim fell a little flatter on that. I hate going back to... I hate everything.
Yeah, I hate that we could come back to that. But like, Drive is interesting though, because I feel I don't feel that we're getting enough of the downtime with the, like, I don't know, like in Rider One, like, you know, a lot of the episodes start off with like, let's go to the beach, or you know, like, let's, you know, do some,
let's
go walking
like
in the mountains, exactly, and like, and you have like the first, you know, you have like a monster attack here and there, but like the first kind of like, I don't know, 8-9 minutes of the episode are like them doing reasonably normal things. And like that's
Shocker in the background.
Yeah, exactly. And you feel, and like I wish they'd do more of that with current stuff, because it really feels like, because it feels like you're building a realistic world, or they exist within a world that is real, not just like these characters doing character things. Okay, so we'll go for another Forza style countdown.
It's the terrifying Batman. Okay.
I must
admit, like, there was a joke a long time ago about Doctor Who episode titles. It was all like, it's always like something of the Daleks, and you spend the whole first episode going, "I wonder who the villain is. I wonder who the villain is." And so, like, with Kamen Rider, it's always like the something monster name. So you know, like, it's always like there's less suspense, which is quite bizarre. Anyway, moving on.
That's funny.
Okay, we'll go for the Forza style countdown on this one. Okay, so 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Or is that the wrong thing? Maybe that's the wrong thing. Sorry.
Rider One, man.
Okay, so we're back into the second episode, or we're into the second episode now. I just really like this. This is a great song.
No, it's...
An army so sent good. From hell. Darkness looms over all of us.
It's great.
Defend the peace of our world.
It's great because it's so awesome. Like, it's so, it's like a heroic ballad, you know?
Mm.
But it's setting up this.
It's almost like awful... kind of Spanish kind of guitar bolero type. I don't know. Like,
oh, yeah.
Something in it.
Again, you know, this would be great in as like a Morricone piece. If Morricone wrote theme songs for Japanese children's shows, it would sound like this.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. It does have such a Western feel. And I mean both types of Western. I just love it. I love his boots, too. He's got great boots.
Yeah, they're cool boots. Do we get the jumping across buildings scene in this one? Oh, no, we don't. That's in later episodes. That's cool. They do, like, a nice model shot of him jumping across buildings on the road,
climbing
which
up
I really
the building
like.
Too. And then this is hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that's epic.
They're showing the stuff that's going to happen right now. Mm. Like, it doesn't matter.
But they show it out of context. It's so cool. It's just like,
terrifying
well,
Batman.
This is going to be intense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, look.
I love how they have to have a capital. I love how they have to have a capital M, otherwise it's copyright. It would have to be the terrifying Batman registered trademark. Classic horror movie opening. Now this is really like,
oh yeah,
absolutely classic by the numbers horror. Mysterious hotel in the dark on her own. This is Psycho, isn't it? Basically, pretty much.
Creepy sound from out of nowhere.
Looking.
That music is terrible.
Yeah, synth music, synth.
It's like something between a violin and I don't know what, but it's creepy. Is it like half violin, half piano? Strings
kind of
terror.
Of it's kind of like dead harpsichord as well. Like, there's a kind of a.
Also, I like that it's always announced as like, you've been chosen. You are great.
And also, I love the way they did that with lighting, like from above. It's like you can't see what's causing the light.
Yeah. And it's funny because it doesn't matter if it's real or not. It's the feeling that it gives you.
It can all be in her mind. It doesn't matter. Like Shocker could be like filling her with psychotropic drugs. It doesn't matter. That's how she sees it.
Yeah, it's expression. It's expressionism.
Yeah, Cannibal Serenity does this like awesome long post about the like expressionism and the psychedelic nature of Kamen Rider and how it's rooted in like Japanese theater.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
It's really great.
Classic tilted camera shot on the corridor. So something you know and changed a bit. Like that's cool. And again, shadows.
It's always good to listen to Cannibal Sarasenian. May not agree with him 100%, but like 98.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Oh yeah, totally.
What's up?
I feel stupid saying this, but like the music is almost a character in this.
It is.
It is. It's like it.
Or an
again,
actor,
very similar to, '70s Who in terms of what they did with the special music and special sounds and all that kind of stuff, and like really pushing music as the way to sell your science fiction, because that's where it comes from.
I mean, it's base emotional manipulation, but here's the thing:
it works
really well done.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's what stories are. Fiction is base emotional manipulation. You just hope it's done well.
Mm.
Man, the magic of editing. That's so great.
Yeah, totally. And so now we're back to normal life, which is all normally lit and that kind of thing.
That was a really interesting shot.
Kind of sports editing, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
It's interesting that it's encompassing so many genres. Like that's the interesting thing. You've got science fiction, body horror itself, kind of, you know, these roots in kaiju movies. Like it's pulling in from everywhere to try to make this product work, which is really cool.
I love like this shot too. Did they have a guy on a bike in front of him, or was that camera mounted to his bike?
I'm guessing probably mounted to the bike.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, no, it's really effective.
It's funny how this episode it doesn't quite follow the format, because later episodes they all start with, you know, Takeshi Hongo was blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And like this one integrates it because it wanted you. It sold that little horror movie in the front there.
Yeah,
I like how that was front loaded. That was really great.
It's like that. And I love the idea that they were kind of still experimenting with it as well. Like, they were kind of like, oh, does this work? Maybe. Try this. Okay, does this work? Bit that, you know, whatever. Like, you know, I love the idea that this was, like, this was an experiment in itself. You know, as much as anything else. I love that as a, you know, they were just like, does this work? Maybe. Who knows? Never trust the woman.
No,
no,
don't
terrible.
Say that.
Like,
the corners are like,
she's a vampire.
You know what? This reminded me of Evil Dead right here. Deadites attacking,
yeah.
You know, in the cabin. That, like, wild motion that she's got going on.
And again, you got the camera kind of tilting as well, the sort of otherworldly nature of it.
Just so you know, we have left the world you know.
I love, too, these... I don't want to assume she's dead, but I was going to say post-mortem. I mean, she looks like she's dead.
Well, it's... You know, you could make... You know, if he knows she's a Shocker cyborg because of the face paint, like, that's going back to the anime when his anger was too... Not the anime, to the manga. When his anger was too great, his scars would show.
Right.
So good. Like, it's a shame he doesn't get them.
Yeah.
You know, I get it.
Sorry, I'm again, like, it's a little bit silly, but I'm totally drawn into, like, the human drama here.
Yeah, like, you barely even know these people, and, like, you know, this is...
But, you know, they do the body horror side of it so well that you're like, ah, oh god, ah.
And, like, look how fantastic, she's just going nuts and just, like, wrecking everything in there.
Just, like, the pain, and you feel the pain, that's the thing, that, you know, she's just...
Well, that's good body horror. Good body horror
has
all those little bits of pain, so that, because those are the pains you understand.
Yeah.
Like, if your veins were exploding, like, you can actually kind of imagine that. Because, like, you've had some sort of cuts, and you just imagine them forming on their own.
Yeah. I love how, like, all of the rooms look the same here.
It might all be the same room, which is pretty funny.
Totally, like, which is, like, I like to think that's artistic, but I kind of know that was probably a money thing too.
Yeah, they could only afford to dress the one room again and again.
Yeah. Also, the hanging things, it's kind of like a curtain of, like a narrative curtain almost, I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, it's everybody.
Yeah, that is so great. And I love, too, I mean, the actress, I think, did a pretty good job. I'm sure they reused that shot, I gotta say. That was good, though.
I wish she was doing it the Christian Bale voice. That
would be... Batman, you will come to the shock of...
I know it is from Shocker. I was testing the affected...
You know, that's pretty clever. I never noticed. It's like silk over his mouth so that he can still talk and it has an articulated mouth. Mm. That's good.
Also, just, he always looks so, like, when he gets his, oh, I'm thinking cleverly, look, buy it. Yeah. Seriously, I love
Fujio. Yeah, the actor's doing a lot of work to emote for a mask of that, Nate, yeah, like.
I love the creepiness, too, of, like, these... You know, masses of basically innocent people being controlled by this greater force.
Yeah.
Just the symbolism behind it is so great.
Yeah, and the idea of, like, incubating a virus inside humans is quite a kind of cool, like, a very science fiction concept, but very much a kind of, like, what's within you will kill you, and, like, you're just being used as a you know, a disposable
thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is... His enemy in this episode is ideology.
Right.
Because it gets into people, it infects them, and it makes it so that a man with a word can make them kill.
Well, I think, too, a great dimension to that is, I love that. It feels like, it's not even a contrivance, it's just like an awesome, like, Ishinomori was brilliant in making his power work off of the turbine like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the fact that when he jumps up, he's above him, it's like a status thing as well. He's like, you know, rise up to me kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's like...
These humans are below you and you think they're below you, but I am not below you.
Just,
I,
like,
will fight for these people.
The visual language is so much more dynamic because of, you know, the falling down and then the rising back up quickly. And just...
Yeah.
I don't know, just the motion's great.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, like, these guys knew how to embrace their limitations.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like...
That's so cool.
Ah, oh, the great leader. Right, this flashing light is scary as heck.
It is.
Like, it's just, it's an amazing concept.
Like if you look on it, it's actually just off to one side. That's the glowing heart of Shocker.
Yeah.
It's not straight in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the idea when he destroys their bases, it just destroys, like, you haven't destroyed, like, one will rise again if you, like, you know, take out one of the bases. I just love that as an idea. Like, this thing goes on, regardless of whether, you know, it's like Hydra, you know, cut off one head, two will sprout kind of thing. Like, it's a really cool concept
yeah.
for an evil organization.
I kind of love this thing here. She's like, no, he killed him. That's not what my bro Takeshi Hongo would do. No, that's what he did. Nah, he wouldn't. But, you know, it does bring me to the question I've been asking since, you know, that I asked also in Kamen Rider the First. Why doesn't she go to the cops?
Well, with what evidence, right?
Yeah, true.
Also, like, you have seen the I don't know, I like the idea that she did go and it was a Shocker Cyborg who met her at the police station. Like, I love that as an idea. That would be cool.
I wish they would have showed
that. Would have been
great. Oh, totally, yeah. Like,
I love too, like,
I do like
how clever she is.
Yeah. Look, she's not taking this away, you know, sitting down.
Yeah.
No.
God, she's got such an intense face, my goodness.
Yeah.
Why were they not a rider duo? That would have been amazing.
Oh, man. In my dreams.
We can think of her as the proto-tackle.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, actually, how, like, they're playing on Hongo being a scientist, because that's kind of the Batman angle. You know, like, Batman, the world's greatest detective. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's both physically strong and smart, and, like, this is the Batman episode, and they're playing on that same dynamic with Hongo. Like, I just love that as a kind of, you know, it's kind of irony in a sense, I guess. I don't know.
I do like the creepy setup they have with the doctor there looking really kind of dazed and out of it. Yes, there was a sentient virus in the sample you gave me. I'm like, oh, well, he's infected then, which is why we're not looking at him right now.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a nice bit of paranoia you can add. Or maybe not. I don't know.
I like, though, too, the idea that it's just like he's so blown away by the concept of a, you know, fully sentient virus.
Yeah. Be like that paranoia element of, like, you know, who are the shock, you know, is it anybody? You know, that's a really great element to add. And everyone's so intense. Like, everyone's like with certain writer series, you get the impression they're kind of winking at the camera and be like, oh, how silly is this? But, like, in this, no, they're totally, like, you know, you believe it because they believe it, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
I like, too, the, like, impossible, I'll just say trap because Hongo said it, that these people are in where they're stuck like this. And there's no way, you know, modern science can do anything about it. I think it's just so cool. Even though there is an easy, you know, kids TV type of way out of it at the end, I still like that it's at first presented as this is insurmountable.
Yeah. But it gets the whole way of, like, you know, consequences to the things that you do. Like, there are some things are irrevocable, and you can't get out of that. And I mean, you know, but
yes,
that's the...
Yes,
that's
called the police.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, at least
it's
brought up.
But
I said.
Yeah. I mean, if,
sorry,
honestly,
I'm
like...
Sorry to interrupt.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, like, there's one thing I find interesting in kids' TV, where it's like, you know, they try and go down the route of some things are irrevocable, and they bring people back from the dead, and I'm a bit like, I don't know what I prefer. It's a bit of a strange one.
I think it's always, for me, it's always, you brought it up, but you weren't willing to carry it through. Then you shouldn't have said anything.
Right.
Yeah, no fair.
Because, like, if...
One customer.
Don't write a story about them dying and then coming back from the dead immediately, unless you're willing to just deal with that, or if they're Gentaro Kisaragi. Look, I'm sorry, you know, like, I know it's actually... a load of bullcrap, but I thought it was so well done.
No, I agree.
It was the fact that Kengo brought him back that was what made it good.
Yes, the power of friendship, which is the core of the series. Like, the core of this series is paranoia and body horror, and these first two episodes are carrying that through.
Yeah, they really are. And again,
I was going to say, like, it's, you totally know what this series stands for within the first, like, 10 minutes. Like, you know, this is laying the cards down right on the table from episode one. And I love that. It's so good for a show. Even though it was, like, so young and, like, probably made by a team who didn't really know what they wanted in terms of a show, they were really like, okay, we have this theme, so we're going to go with that theme. We're going to 100% push that, because they're kind of so sure of their identity and yet still experimenting, which is an amazing dichotomy to pull off.
I just want to give props to Ruriko's actor again, because she's just so intense. It's great.
She is.
So driven. I gotta say, I saw part of the anime of Helsing, and I knew somebody who was watching it at the time, and I would walk in on them watching it, and I was just disgusted, and I thought it was terrible. One of the ideas I kind of liked from it was this idea of the ghouls that were created by vampires, and this crowd right here is reminding me of that. You know, people who've had their will pretty much taken from them, and it's like really gross to see all these people just laying about waiting for their master to come along and manipulate them and into being animated again. And it's like, it's not even their will. It's just their...
They've totally become things.
Yeah.
Tools for the use of Shocker.
Yeah, and that's it. That's the thing. Shocker strips away people's humanity. What's the paint for? It's to obfuscate their human flesh, which, you know, is telling of their humanity.
Yeah, because they hate their humanity.
Yeah.
Because they're terrible. I love it. Oh, whoops. Wrong guy. Hey, guys, we found our target. One of our drones found the target, rather. Like, and I like that no one has to say it. Oh, dear.
I also love the idea that, like, each of the kind of legions of soldiers is, like, branded by the commander they have. So, like, these guys have got different, like, face makeup, and, like, they're obviously, like, his guys.
Yeah, that is really cool.
If you look back at the Spider-Man episode, at the last episode, one of the Shocker guys following him had a spider bit of branding on his tracker, on his...
Yeah.
And that's something they did in the manga, too, and I really liked it, because everyone, you know... Once you're the head of a Shocker cell, you get just, you know, you get mooks.
Yeah.
Mm. You get to paint them and customize them, and it's great.
Well, it also gives you an idea, like, you know, they're not just like stormtroopers. Like, they have, you know, they have like a, there's an individuality, but there's also this cold uniformity to them as well. Which is like, you know, it's a really interesting way of portraying that as a kind of that dichotomy as well.
And again, going off what you guys are saying, these guys are, the mooks are commodities to these ascended people who are, you know, Shocker's elite. So, Shocker simultaneously wants to dehumanize people, but then those that are most useful to it, it rewards with, I love that casual walk he's got going on. Shocker's willing to reward people with, you know, giving them more commodities. Kind of like almost, like, chasing dollars, you know?
Yeah.
One of us.
His head almost looks like a pig's head.
Yeah, he does. It's weird.
It is a bit, yeah.
It's a weird bat head.
I don't think that's bad. I don't know. Like, it's... I mean, the bat... shape, I don't know, like, it's a good costume, like, I'll give them, you know, credit for that. It's a good prosthetic, but, like, I love how they have total contempt for the people who aren't in Shocker.
Yeah.
Like,
yep,
they don't even, like, that sounds like a certain group that, yeah, anyway, there's a lot, as you say, ideology, like, there's this total disregard for those of the outside. I was thinking of ISIS, actually, but, like...
Oh, that too.
Like, that's my kind of, like... This, like, yeah, there's this, like, disregard for those who are outside of your ideology. Like, they're even less than, they're less than people to you. As you say, they're commodities, they're just things.
And anyone who would do less than die for the ideology is just crap.
Of course.
It's terrible. It's such a good visualization of that idea.
Yeah. And now a man who's going to do a deal with the devil for, well, a Faustian pact, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know he's going to double-cross him, but, like, you know, that regardless.
But I think the great thing is that you have a hero who's willing to double-cross a villain like this.
Well, and it's yeah. also the thing where, you know, the you know, there's this big taboo on, like, shame and being wrong and having to be publicly humiliated because you admit you were wrong. And, like, Hongo's just like, no, look, if it means they hate me, I don't care as long as I do a good thing.
If it means they hate me, I can just ride a kick them. Like, that's the kind of, you know, that's the thing, like, you know.
I love how delighted he is at that. Look yeah, at his yeah. face. He's like, oh, it's in your body. I'll just tear your body apart.
I was going to say, yeah. Like,
it's even better well, in the manga.
He's really happy when he's jumping out there.
It's even better in the manga when he's
fighting
Batman. He gets
to be Kamen Rider. I mean, come on. Like,
he actually, I think he like stabs him with a shovel and then like tears his wing off, and it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, cool.
That sounds about right.
So boss.
Again, like... That is one of the things I love about Ishinomori, is just that they're all, like, all of his heroes are just the worst. They're monsters. They're terrible. But it's always explicitly like, no, humanist causes. If you mess with the environment, my Kikaido will end you.
That was a big tomato you threw
there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's terrible.
But I don't know, like, yeah, another one. But like,
but it's also
I love him fighting in the shadows, though, is so cool. Like, yeah. Just the way that scene's lit.
And
it, like, oh, just...
It's almost comical the way he's launching those guys off, but it's also, like, pretty cathartic.
Yes.
You know, to think about what Shocker has done to people, and he's just dishing yeah. it right back. And, like, that. What's scary about those grunts, it's like, are they willing? Are they doing this willingly, or are they being controlled? And it seems like they're doing it willingly. And
yeah.
I think Which that's what makes it so satisfying and scary.
I like how
but satisfying when he kills
I like them. How their fighting styles are almost the same. Right to throw. That's a movie I haven't seen in a while.
Again, I'm thinking of Evil Dead 2, where they had the blood run down the screen.
Well, that scene, it's like the end of the new Dread movie as well. It's a similar, very similar thing.
I just like the idea that he's just walking around with this disembodied monster hand. Cure, cure, cure.
No one asks questions of Takeshi Hongo. Just like...
Look, he's the guy who just appeared out of nowhere and fixed you.
Why are you scratching me with that thing? Don't ask questions.
Look, do you want,
and they're back
do you
together.
Want your friend to not be a zombie vampire monster? That would be nice. Then shut the hell up. I'm Takeshi Hongo, son.
I love how the extras are actually acting in the background.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Like, just... You don't have to run anymore, except you do, because that's how you were made. It's kind of really bittersweet, in a sense.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that's how all the episodes end, with like this kind of really bittersweet note to them. It's like, yeah, he wins, but actually he can't be accepted by society, in a sense.
Well, I like, too, how it's he can't accept himself yet.
Yeah, that's his fight, as much as it is against Shocker.
Oh, man, that's so great.
Oh, totally.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know what? I almost... Scorpion. It's too bad we don't have more time, because Scorpion Man would be a great episode to watch, too.
Oh, totally. We should do... Yeah, we should do this again sometime. Like, oh, that's a good mask.
I love the makeup on his mucks. Sorry.
Yeah, it's cool. Like.
There's actually so much good about this Scorpion Man episode, because it's almost like, I don't know, like a precursor to... It like, heads off the temptation to do Evil Riders, I kind of want to say. I think I'm quite saying it correctly. But I get the idea that when they were creating The End for Decade, they thought about the Scorpion Man episode. Just the little I know about him, that they're kind of frenemies and... I don't know. It's just a little idea in my head, but I haven't seen enough of Decade to say whether or not that's accurate. And this is the part where you inform me that no, I definitely haven't, because it's totally not accurate.
I haven't seen Decade, so I don't know.
Okay.
Well, look, I think you should watch Decade.
Okay.
I understand.
I think we should all watch. I think we should all watch Decade together. But like that's.
That would be a very interesting thing if we could do like fifth. You know, that would be a 15-episode writerology on Decade, where we just you know go in and watch all the two-parters.
Like I would love to watch every episode of Kamen Rider ever made with all of you guys, because I just think that would be the most fun ever. But that would require us to like ensconce ourselves in rooms and not have lives for 5 years, you know.
it's slightly problematic.
I would love that, just because I love the insight that like I get from watching these things with other people, because obviously it's not with Toku, it's not something you'd get to do a lot, especially with people who like know stuff, which is you know cool, or you know at least sounds like they do to me anyway.
that's the illusion.
Make it till you make it, bro.
That's why I've been doing this for years.
Do we have more to say about this other than like it's fantastic and everybody should go see it?
Yeah, if you want to get it, incidentally, you can head over to kitsubs.blogspot.com. I believe is their URL.
That is
you can
correct.
Where you can find all these links, and also there are other subs they're doing. They've just finished Stronger, which is another amazing series. If you want to watch that one, so yeah, they're doing a great job over there. So go over and download it, and you can watch along with us because it was the Kitsubs episodes we were watching. So yeah. Feel free to download them and then listen along with us if you haven't already. But I guess you should probably put that at the beginning of the episode rather than the end. But anyway,
it'll be both.
The magic of editing.
I'll just copy it and paste it over there, so it'll be both.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So I just thought about that. I was halfway through it. I was like, oh yeah, that doesn't really make sense. Why would you listen to it and then not want to? Anyway.
Well, the plan would be to put the links in the post.
Yeah,
so
totally. Yeah,
say, what do you mean you're doing a commentary and then you go get it?
On these things, yeah. No, that's fair enough. I just thought I should like mention that at some point. But no, these episodes are awesome. They do an amazing job of introducing the whole concept of Kamen Rider as a concept, not just as a show, but like as a whole concept. And I think, and I know a lot of people who suggest this is where you should start if you're starting with the series. I don't know whether I'd agree with that, but I do think it gives you a great concept of what the show is all about from day one, which is incredible as an accolade to a show that was made back in the 70s on I imagine a budget that was very limited, and it's a real testament to the creativity of the people who originally created the show. So props to all of them for doing an amazing job on what they did.
Yeah, personally, I would suggest coming all the way back here just to get a sense of it. The only drawback is that they haven't finished subbing it yet, but I would say you could definitely just watch the first, you know, 13 or 14 episodes. I can't remember where the switch happens.
I think it's 15, but I could be wrong on that one. Okay. I've only recently watched it myself, but yeah, I think it's around the middle teens anyway.
Yeah, so I would say definitely watch those, especially like I think Jig from Kitsubs called I think it's episode 12. Like he said, this could have just been called Ruriko Rider, because she takes over a lot of the action and moving the episode forward because Fujioka's out because of his injury. Even though I think that injury happened in like 10, and so they were just using a stunt double for all his rider action, and she was really moving the plot forward, like almost chasing him around, or kind of like he was following her. It's kind of a weird setup, but the way it's like what happens is really cool. So. Anyway, yeah, I would definitely say, start with that first set of episodes until Ichimonji shows up, and keep watching if you want to, especially because, there's a great episode with the flying squirrel, Kaijin.
Oh, yeah, no, that is good, that is good.
Yeah.
I did not know there was a flying squirrel, Kaijin.
Oh, there is.
In episode 26, I believe, and it's amazing.
Yeah, nice. I've just watched it really recently, yeah, that's good. And the one with the professional wrestler.
Oh, yeah,
I can't remember what he turns into, but that's a really good episode, too.
Oh, he Parasaigon. He's a poisonous Parasaigon.
Yes.
With like
yes.
a death poison that he shoots out. And he kills like dozens of people, I think.
Yeah, it's nice. Good. It's a good episode. Right?
Yeah, it's even a two-parter.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's 23, 24 or something like that?
Could be. It has Goro, which is a little kid who hangs out at Snack Amigo, and a friend of his brother. the guy who got turned into the Kaijin, he has a little brother, and it's Goro, this kid, and the little brother, like, dealing with the issue of the, the older brother being bad or not. Just it's a really cool episode.
Mm.
There's a lot of great places you can go in the original show.
Yeah, and I think actually in some senses it's a shame that the show sometimes didn't go as far with some of those elements as it could have done, particularly with Hongo's inhumanity. I think that was a real thread that they didn't press on as much as I would have liked. There's a couple of scenes where they kind of go for it, and I really wish they would have pushed into that a bit more. But it does give you a good baseline for discussing that in other contexts, which is nice. But it's a very, very well put together series, considering kind of where it was, I guess. Considering this is TV that's, you know, nearly 40 years old, over 40 years old now.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about how well constructed it is. I mean, you know, that, like, yeah, that says a lot for a show, considering some of what came out in the 70s.
Well, and heck, considering a lot of the stuff that
comes out. What we get now. I was going to say, yeah, what we get 4 years on, yeah. I was going to say, go watch it if you haven't, because it's really worth it.
Yeah, out of curiosity, Aleph, how much have you seen of this show?
This.
Okay.
Like, I've watched, like, the first two, and then I was going to go back and watch the rest, and then it's like, oh, I got distracted by something else. Well, I think that was, like, when we...
Such is the bane of watching Tokusatsu. Oh, I have Ryuki to watch. I still have I've got episode 9 of that's just come out with Subvent, so yeah.
There's actually, like, if you need to be teased a little more to get interested, there's a Cobra Man who shoots fire... a bee woman with a rapier or fence, or like a foil.
Oh, that is cool.
And she controls people with glasses, and
Oh, nice.
It's pretty cool.
What's the episode where they trap him in a pit and remove all the wind so he can't?
Oh, that's I think that's episode 5 with Mantis Man and the earthquakes.
Okay, I was like, because the thing I hate with most evil organizations in a lot of these shows is it's like, let's do the thing we've done 25 times before, because that's definitely going to work the 26th time. Whereas, like, with Shocker, you kind of get the impression they were like, okay, that didn't work. Next plan, and it's different to the plan before. You know, so actually you get the impression that this is like an evolving organization that's learning from its mistakes rather than just repeating them, which is kind of a trope of a lot of organizations in this kind of media.
Yeah, I always thought the... Kamen Rider villain organizations always a lot scarier than villain organizations in a lot of other things. Because, like, you know, I like Shocker and Golgom are like the Alpha and Omega for me, and I know that, yes, they're kind of also the Alpha and Omega of you know, the Showa era.
Mm.
But I just love Golgom. I mean, they're so...
I don't know, I think... I know.
They've got such mad plans.
Yeah.
And you know, because they're magic, they can go quasi-mystical with it, which I... Like, look, the episode where they made all of the mothers of Japan stop caring about their children, not unproblematic.
Right.
It's not, like, it is, it's kind of like, well, that's really gender essentialist and kind of gross. At the same time, I'm like, okay, what is the scariest thing that you can put into a child's head? Your parents don't love you anymore. It's like... It's such a primal fear to go after, and I love it.
Mm.
But, you know, I can only talk about other series because I have not watched as much about Rider 1 as I would like. Mm. I just always like Shocker every time they come up, and especially knowing that the versions I have seen that are not in the manga are all kind of these weird, pale reflections compared to what everyone has told me about the original.
Mm.
And so
I do find it interesting the kind of the respect that the first season garners amongst fans, because in some things, like people like in Star Trek TNG, like a lot of people will slag off the first series, but will still be fans of it, but they will still say, oh, you know, the first series, nah, you know, it's there, it's a thing, but you know, whatever. But then, like, with this, people are like, no, like, the It's good, you know, kind of thing. There's that, like, assurance of quality kind of thing in it, which is because it was well constructed. But, like, I just find it interesting that the fandom hasn't, like, disowned it over the years, but actually has embraced it even more, I feel, which is really interesting.
I do, too. Like, every now and again you'll see, it's all really simple, moralistic characters, and it's not dark enough. And I'm like,
shut
your fool mouth.
I was going to say, like... let me sit you down and teach you some things, son. Like, it's kind of that, like, an appeal to it.
We hope that you have enjoyed this episode, this very special episode of the Uncommon Cast RX. And I don't know. We're not doing a year in review show. I'll just say that right now because I think those are dumb. No offense to you if you've done one or constructed one or have decided to take the time to write us a script for a year in review show. But
we would totally perform that script with the appropriate amount of sarcasm if you have.
We might at this point, yeah. But I just listened to like 3 shows today and I realized, oh, I can skip through a bunch of this one and a bunch of this one and a bunch of this one. So I'm not going to force that on anyone else.
I don't know what our year in review would be. Like, what is the year in review special?
Gaim sucked.
Drive is problematic, but we're getting there. You know, like,
Aelif joined the cast, and we should all sing his praises.
All bow.
I went nuts over Kiva.
I joined the cast too. That happened in 2014. That was a cool thing.
That's true.
I don't know. I think we'd all prefer to give you new content rather than things you've heard before. Us talking about things that you've already heard. So this is why we did this, to give you some new content for Christmas, and like an extra special thing, because it's, you know, it's best, whatever.
Well, the holiday season.
Yeah, you know, it's the season of giving, so we're giving this to you. enjoy.
Please.
And to ourselves. It's a gift that keeps on giving, right or wrong.
It really is. It really is.
So now we've shoehorned enough holiday references in, can we, like...
Yeah, I was going to say, y'all feel free to just edit the bit at the start out.
Can we just add some schmaltzy, like, It's a Wonderful Life music in as we talk about it?
I'm not sure about that.
Oh, man.
Only if you sing it. You can reach us on Twitter at UncommonRx or the show's inbox, UncommonCastRx@gmail.com, to submit any questions, suggest topics for future discussion, or just let us know how we're doing. This episode's hosts can be reached at NeedsMoreAelif for Aelif, at Trial of Heroes for myself, at The Imposter for Jonathan, and it's Sono Your Face for Sono. Please rate and review to raise our visibility and listen to us wherever you are by subscribing through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS reader. This has been a production of the Tool Network, bringing you analysis for the team. For more, visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com.